This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, very good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us as we move along this week in a very, very busy week. As the NBA playoffs first round will start to wrap up. And, of course, we've got the NFL draft, which starts on Thursday night. And the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs doing the same thing. But back there used to be a time in the NBA playoffs where the opening round was five games. And it was kind of chaotic because if the road team in the first two games of the series could capture one of the first two games, then it kind of was nerve-wracking because it was a short series and home court was now shifting. And it was kind of dramatic, and it was kind of, like I said, stressful. But with a seven-game series, you sort of lay it out a little bit longer and a little bit more time for teams to sort of digest one another and really figure out the game plans. You're starting to see that right now with the number of series that are in command of one team, right? Despite Minnesota winning game four last night, it looks like the Denver Nuggets will have a nice gentleman sweep of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Atlanta tried valiantly last night at State Farm Arena to get the fourth game at home to even up their series with the Celtics, but the Celtics hit too many three-pointers yesterday, 16 in all, and every time they looked like they were being pressed, they hit one, and now they're up 3-1. Knicks did the exact same thing at the Garden. They won game four. They lead their series 3-1. Same with the Phoenix Suns, as Clippers are playing without Kawhi Leonard, out without Paul George. They're in control of that series. Philadelphia is already done. But the series right now that I think is getting a lot of attention and a lot of focus is what's going on between Sacramento and Golden State, and rightfully so, because this was one of those series that we talked about in the Western Conference that had a lot of angles to it where you would say, wow, this is a 3-6, but this is not really a 3-6. This is a number three team that is facing the defending champions, the four-time champions, and a team that may have been going through just the motions of the regular season to then get to the playoffs. But in the first two games of this series in Sacramento, the Kings looked better. Now, again, they're feeding off the home crowd. They're feeding off the fact that they haven't been in the playoffs in a very long time. And, you know, they were up for the moment. It was how Golden State was going to react in games three and four that were going to matter in this series. Did Draymond Green's suspension in game three, was that something that was going to ignite Golden State? Yeah, it did. And what about game four? Because you can get all the emotion out of game three, but if Sacramento wins that critical game four yesterday, now we're talking about a different story. But in the end, it was Golden State pulling it off with a one-point victory in the best game of the weekend. And it also had a moment of Steph Curry going, timeout, no timeout, and oh, boy. And then De'Aaron Fox hitting a three-pointer to make the game interesting, really at the end when Curry misses. And then Draymond Green's defense on Fox, they kick it out to Harrison Barnes. He misses the shot, and Golden State has evened up this series at two. I haven't really gotten a read on this, and I don't really – I want to lean towards, well, you know, Golden State now has won two games in this series. They are a four-time defending champion. They are now in a groove. But I don't know, because I get the feeling if I'm Mike Brown and I'm the Sacramento Kings, I'm frustrated that I didn't win yesterday. I'm frustrated that I didn't complete the comeback in a game that looked like it was going Golden State's way pretty much all day. I think I can feed off of that and get my guys back to Sacramento feeling like they should be winning this series. That this series is in their hands, not Golden State's hands. But that's what I love about this one. Again, all the other ones, there are circumstances in these series, in this opening round, where they're just not equal. And a lot of it is because the seedings are real, right? The Denver Nuggets are way better than Minnesota. Right. And in the case of Milwaukee, they're playing without Giannis, and that could get a little sticky in game four. But if Giannis does come back for game four, they are better than Miami. Boston is way better than Atlanta. Philadelphia is way better than Brooklyn. But in a lot of these series, we get that feeling. In this series, this 3-6, this was more evenly matched than any series that we had in the opening round, maybe outside a couple of the 4-5s, because the 4-5s are about the same. But in the 4-5s, we're seeing New York take it to Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't have any answers. Jalen Brunson is emerging as a playoff star. in the Phoenix Los Angeles Clippers series, we're seeing a shorthanded Clipper team try and try, but Kevin Durant and Phoenix, they know now how to play together. And so Phoenix has taken control of that series. This is the one that's got some real storylines behind it. This is the one that's really interesting. We'll get to the Lakers in Memphis in a minute because they're playing game four tonight. But this game four yesterday says a lot about Sacramento, and it's been saying a lot about Golden State. It's amazing to me how all the predictors for game three, which were without Draymond Green, the Golden State Warriors are going to rally at home. They do this a time. They've done this before. They seem to rally against adversity. And then they did. But I thought, man, game four on Sunday is the most interesting game to me. Because if Sacramento can just overcome this and say, you know what, we took our lumps at the Chase Center. That was expected, right? We walked into the belly of the beast and we didn't win. But we got a feel for it. We got a feel for the environment. We got a feel for the playoff atmosphere at the Chase Center. But as Golden State was up by double digits in this one, and Sacramento just kept trying to creep back and creep back and creep back, the moment of the Steph Curry timeout really started to change things because that became a four-point play for Sacramento. They make the technical, and then Fox hits the three. And then they got Curry to miss a running sort of jumper in the lane, where he just launched it a little too soft. And then they had a real opportunity. But the guy that stepped up for Golden State the most in that critical situation was Draymond Green. You don't miss Draymond Green's offense. You miss his defense when he's not out there. And he is like a glove out there on Fox. I mean, Fox had nowhere to go but find Harrison Barnes. And Barnes got a great look. But if you were to sort of rewind that and freeze the time, and ask Golden State what situation would they take, right? They're going to take Harrison Barnes taking that shot any day of the week, then De'Aaron Fox finding a way to get into the lane and maybe hitting a shot. Draymond Green's defense was spectacular. So, again, the opening round of an NBA series doesn't usually give us a lot of drama. You know, you get one or two series that are really interesting. But for the most part, it plays out because of the difference in seeding. So you usually get five games and done, maybe six if you've been pushing a team. But I think this one is going to go seven. I think this is going to give you everything that you possibly can want out of a series. I think it's got some really interesting angles to it. The emergence of De'Aaron Fox and the Sacramento Kings team that jumped right into Mike Brown, and he lands there, and he's turned that around. And they have been giving Golden State a ton of fits. When we thought that Golden State was just playing 82 games of the regular season and sitting around doing nothing, and then, whoop, well, the playoffs start. Let's get moving.
So Golden State's going to win on the road?
Because
if I'm Sacramento, that's what I'm thinking about right
now. That's what I'm thinking, right, is that if I'm Sacramento, I can be frustrated losing that game.
Yep.
But I would, if I'm Mike Brown, I would be like, we are still in control of this series. We could have won yesterday. Let's get back to work today.
Yep.
Because we are still in control of this. We've got two games at home, right? If we hold court, this thing is at least going seven, and we're going to host it. We have an opportunity to go to San Francisco for game six and wipe this team out and take this team out. I've been very impressed with Sacramento in the series. They looked better in the first two games. They looked better at home. They looked better. They were faster. They were quicker to the ball. They were much more organized offensively. They didn't get rattled. They very, very impressed with what Mike Brown has done in this series. But I wouldn't be hanging my head if I was Sacramento at all. After losing yesterday. I mean, I know it's tough. The thing was, they were trying to come back. So they were down, and then there were circumstances that popped up. You know, look, think about if Curry doesn't call timeout, if somehow he breaks that pressure or whatnot, then you're not talking about a missed opportunity to win the game. I mean, that's how much control Golden State had in the final, you know, minute of that contest until he had the technical on the missed timeout. And then they converted it into 4 points, and then it made the game really tight, really close. But I'm still liking it. Really impressed with the Celtics against Atlanta. Their three-point, we talked to Brian Barrett about this last week. The three-point shot for the Celtics is a very critical part of their offense. It's what they do really well. They got a bunch of sharpshooters. They knocked down 16 in the game against Atlanta. Atlanta was pesky, really pesky. But every single time the Celtics needed something, they would Trae Young would come down and hit a shot, or whoever, DeJounte Murray would hit a shot, whatever it was, they would come back and hit a three, and then they would put the cushion back up. But Jalen Brunson and the Knicks, what a story that's becoming.
That's kind of fun.
That is Jalen Brunson went right to New York. Remember Mark Cuban was saying how they really didn't have a chance to offer Jalen Brunson anything? He played really well last year in the playoffs for Dallas and then just went to New York, and he's been fantastic. He's really emerging as a playoff star, I thought Cleveland would make this series a little interesting, but impressed with the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one series we were pointing our finger at, right, going, if all the first-round series in the East, that's the one to look at. And it really, you know, I'm happy for the Knicks. I'm happy for New York, because this is, you know, I mean, they haven't had this in God knows how long.
Yeah, they have not been to the second round of the playoffs in 10 years. So they're one game away from making that. And, you know, and this is a Cleveland team. I mean, they got Donovan Mitchell, and they've been trying to, you know, sort of build it back up after LeBron had left and whatnot. And they've got a fine team. I mean, there's good players on this team. I mean, Caris LeVert is a good player, but the Knicks are very, very impressive. All right, we got the NBA playoffs going on. We've got the NFL draft coming up. And by the way, there's also some college football that we want to get into as well. Thanks for joining us. It's Tony D and Ron Culver. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
To Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Your thoughts on not only the NBA playoffs, but you can go with the draft, which starts on Thursday night. Carolina Panthers with the number one pick. Hey, by the way, you can hear Wake Up Call now in Phoenix on 1580 The Fanatic. Glad we are back on in Phoenix. And also want to thank Ron Cohen for the efforts of bringing the show to the Valley of the Sun, with the Phoenix Suns in control of that series with the Clippers, 3-1. They've won 3 straight, and the Clippers playing shorthanded. No Paul George, which they knew at the beginning of the series. Now no Kawhi Leonard. And Phoenix 8-0 before the playoffs started when Kevin Durant was in their lineup. Now, 11-1 with Kevin Durant.
That's
in their
not
lineup.
Too shabby.
Not too shabby. And I'm really looking forward to seeing this team play the Denver Nuggets in the second round. I think I'm really looking forward to seeing that. It's again, seeding is only a matter of how you did the full body of work, not necessarily where you are at this particular point in time. Phoenix is a perfect example of that, right? You get Kevin Durant, you're going to be way better than what your body of work has done into the season, leading you to a 4 seed. You know, if they had Kevin Durant all year long, it'd probably be the number one seed in the Western Conference. But that's not here or there. It only matters what you're doing right now. And albeit Denver would have you know, home court advantage in round two, this Phoenix team is very good with Kevin Durant, 11-1 again, as I mentioned. And Denver, you know, while they lost last night, Jokic had a fantastic game in an overtime loss to Minnesota. That's probably, to me, the real definition of a gentleman's sweep, right? This is Denver leading 3-0. Their star player has a magnificent game. He scores 43 points, has 11 rebounds. Minnesota needs overtime. Every effort they possibly can get. Anthony Edwards with 34 points. Every effort that they can put out there to avoid a sweep. They still have to go to overtime to put Denver away, and the Nuggets will go back for game 5 later this week and, you know, figure out how to get to round 2 after that. But a Denver-Phoenix round 2, that's must-see TV. Absolutely must-see TV. I'm really excited for that series. The Lakers and the Grizzlies will have game 4 tonight, with the Lakers leading 2-1. Now, Dylan Brooks is not suspended for the hit on LeBron James from game 3 on Friday, Saturday. I'm getting my weekends confused. I had a little surgery on Friday, so my weekend was a blur, absolute blur. But nevertheless, that's game 4 tonight. Dylan Brooks is not suspended. People think he should have been, but LeBron was changing direction. I mean, come on. Let's not get so overdramatic here. I mean, my goodness. I grew up in an era where you could clothesline a guy going up for the basket. And now I'm wondering, now we're asking for suspensions on players who you know, trying to guard somebody going in the opposite direction and they should happen to hit and a player goes down. Ugh, I don't know. Dylan Brooks, as I said this before last week, people don't get on Dylan Brooks. This is who he is. He is this guy. He's a trash talker. You can criticize him for going after the king and, you know, making comments about LeBron James and not respecting LeBron James. Those are fine, but that's what Dylan Brooks does. He wants to say the media makes him the villain. He makes himself the villain. This is who he is as a player. Solid player, but this is what he does. But I said this last week too. This is one of the reasons why the Lakers, they don't need LeBron James to score 40 against Memphis. Anthony Davis beats the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are worried about Anthony Davis more than they're worried about LeBron. Now, you would think, why wouldn't you be worried about LeBron? LeBron's doing a lot of stuff offensively that Anthony Davis isn't. And Memphis can't guard Anthony Davis. And if Davis plays on a 30-13 night, right? 30 points, at a little over 13. They're going to win the series. Ja Morant on that hurt wrist, 22 consecutive points in game three. That was fantastic. So this opening round has been really fun. This opening round's got a lot of angles and different talking points. Not in the East, outside of Giannis's back. But I don't blame Milwaukee. They lost game three. And Giannis didn't play. So if you're following that series, Giannis suffered a lower back contusion in game one, and he only played, 11 minutes of that game because he tried to come back. So he left the game with a back injury, tried to come back in the second quarter, and then he realized, this isn't going to work. So he was out for game one. They lose game one. But then in game two, he didn't play at all, and they exploded. I mean, they blew Miami out of the arena. So if you're Mike Budenholzer and you've got an injured superstar and you're thinking to yourself that old adage that we talk about with coaches, right? How much, what percent of my player is still good enough to be out there? If you're Mike Budenholzer, why wouldn't you say, look, we just showed how dominant we can be without Giannis, right? When we have Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday and Bobby Portis and Brooke Lopez, we still have guys that can score. We just annihilated them. Let's go to Miami and see what game three does. Let's see what we can do in game three. If we can continue this up and I can get him more rest and we can just get out of this series, that's better off. We're better off for that. Right? So, because the winner of this series is likely going to take on the Knicks. And if the Knicks dispatched Cleveland in five games, the Knicks are going to be well rested and ready to go for game one, whoever comes out of this series. And if you're Milwaukee now, you've just extended this longer by losing game three. So if you think you're going to be get out of this series, well, now the earliest you can get out of this is in six games. And if you don't have Giannis, it's going to be seven, and you better figure out a way to get by. So Giannis did some individual work yesterday, but the status is still not known for tonight's game number four. But that being said, if you're Milwaukee, you can still win this series without Giannis. This is the big problem that Budenholzer has, right? Is that you are in a desperate situation. You've got to get Giannis back out on the floor. You've got to get him back out because you don't want to go down 3-1 to the Miami Heat. This is still a team with Jimmy Butler. And albeit they don't have Tyler Hero, this is still a team with Jimmy Butler. And if you're down 3-1, you now have to win every game from here on out. And now you really have to force Giannis into a situation where he is at what percentage is he ready to go back out there and play? And what damage could you cause him for a second round series against likely the New York Knicks, unless Cleveland can somehow get their act together and extend that series and make it a little bit more interesting. But if Miami wins tonight, boy, it's going to be a real problem for Milwaukee in the Giannis situation to win three straight and come out of this series. So it's very critical tonight for the Milwaukee Bucks, extremely critical to leave Miami 2-2. And like I said, if you're leaving 2-2, it means you're extending this series almost to this weekend with game six. So that's the earliest you can get out of this series. And tonight, the Lakers in Memphis, with the Grizzlies down 1-2, the Lakers could take a commanding 3-1 lead in that series. So, again, some of these series in game in the first round have been really interesting, but some not. Philadelphia dispatched Brooklyn rather easily, and they are waiting for the winner of the Celtics and Hawks series, and that looks like it's going to be Boston. So it's very likely you're going to have the Celtics and Sixers facing off. So, man, that's what basically I did this weekend, recovering and sitting around the house doing nothing after having a little surgery on Friday. By the way, I'm too old to have surgery anymore. I don't want to have surgeries anymore. I'm done. I don't like the whole process. I don't mind being done with them, but I hate the whole process.
Getting up and going in the morning?
Yeah. You get up, and this was a minor, this was a very, very minor thing. And I went, and I get there, and my appointment's at 10:30, and I walk in. And, oh, by the way, this happened. I walked in, and the lady says, can I get your insurance card and your ID? So I opened up my wallet to get my ID. No driver's license. My driver's license is not in my
nice.
Wallet. Yeah, and I go, oh, my God. What? So I start, like, panicking. I'm flushing. I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm starting to think about where it is. I'm looking through the whole wallet. It's not there. Lady goes, ah, that's all right. I go, okay. So I sit down, and my wife goes, where's your driver's license? That stern, motherly yep. voice. She goes, where's your driver's license? I go, I don't know. She goes, airport. I go, you know what? I don't usually do that when I fly because I just was in Houston a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I said, when I give my ID and my ticket to the TSA agent, I'm usually in line in security, and it's long enough for me to put everything back where I took it out. I'm usually just standing there and holding my, you know,
yeah.
taking off my shoes. I'm usually like, all right, wallet. I don't need my driver's license anymore. That goes back in. I said, I always put it away. I never scramble and like throw it all together. I said, I don't know. I don't know where it is. So we got to the house. After I was done, I looked all over for it. Couldn't find it. So then I was like, you know what? Maybe I said to my wife, I said, I could call the Houston airport to see if somebody turned it into lost and found. She goes, or you could just go to the DMV and get a new one. I go, yeah, it's probably a better idea.
I would rather call Houston.
Right?
Are you kidding me?
I know. That's what I was trying to tell her.
I
found out I can get a duplicate license in the mail. So I went online. I did have my driver's license number
yeah.
from some other document. We found that. I went on there and got it. I paid $8, and they're supposed to ship me a new driver's license. I was like, but yeah, no
so
doubt.
Now
would
there's
you
somebody
rather
out
call
there...
Houston, the lost and found, and then have go through everything yeah. and then mail it back?
But now there's somebody out there who's using your ID as a fake ID.
That's right.
Someone's trying to pass off as a, just to get into that bar.
Yep.
He's 20 years old using your ID.
Well, it looks like you lost weight, Tony, Anthony. Looks like you lost about 100 pounds. Yeah, I did. All right, it is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joining us and again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so it is draft week, Thursday night, Carolina Panthers on the clock. Number one overall pick. And the Houston Texans have the number 2 pick. It looks like Bryce Young is going number one. Do you get that feeling? That Alabama quarterback Bryce Young is going to be taken number one? Or do you think that in the end this is going to be like a Baker Mayfield situation where we're going to be like, whoa, all right, Will Levis, congratulations on being the number one pick and going to Charlotte, Carolina. Like, is there going to be – C.J. Stroud would not be a surprise. Bryce Young would not be a surprise. Baker Mayfield was a tremendous surprise when that happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was. I remember that.
I mean, it really was. So I think Bryce Young is going number one. It just feels
right.
like a Bryce Young night.
But
they
do,
can throw all sorts of different deflections.
I was in Dallas for that draft.
Was everybody as shocked as everybody was at home?
Everyone was assuming Sam Darnold.
Yep.
Until what, like maybe the tweet? There was a tweet that went out like maybe a minute before it was announced. And the thing that I remember most, like, you know, I was up with all the rest of the media guys, and everyone's phones, you know, get that alert or whatever, and you know, the buzz is going. You just hear this buzz just growing and growing and growing before the announcement is made, because people generally were in shock.
Yeah.
We were like, oh my, I mean, no, that came out of left field, it felt like.
Sure was.
I mean, I don't remember, like, was Baker Mayfield even considered top five at that moment? Yeah.
Again, if C.J. Stroud is selected, that's not a surprise. These two have been 1-2, 2-1, however you want to put it, right? I mean, this has been
But like you said, if Will Levi's.
Will Levi's.
If Will Levis is all of a sudden there, or if it's, I mean.
Anthony Richardson.
I was going to say his name, but it's like, oh, he can't, right?
No.
But if he is, I mean, we're all going to sit back and go, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember, here's the fun part about all of this draft hype is, remember a couple of, was it not that long ago, we were talking about Anthony Richardson. I even think we had a promo on it where we were saying, like, look, this is very similar. Like, Anthony Richardson has got, and this was a couple of weeks ago, had a similar vibe. Like, there was Patrick Mahomes, but nobody really liked Patrick Mahomes, but the Chiefs liked him, right? The Chiefs really liked him, and they moved up to get him, and people were giving him C-plus grades on the draft, and they were like, yeah, this Patrick Mahomes guy, I mean, good luck with that. And I thought Anthony Richardson could have that same angle, but that's not true. Because right today, that was a couple of weeks ago as we started this process, it was like before the combine. Now Anthony Richardson is being seen as a very, very legitimate quarterback for a team. I mean, a very legitimate quarterback. So he's not going to be... He's not going to get a C+. Some team is not going to get a C+ if they were to move up and get Anthony Richardson, if they wanted to find a way to pop in and snag him. But that being the case, again, there's a buzz that happens in this draft like a couple of days before of where teams are thinking. And then, of course, there's the moment that Roger Goodell comes out with the selection. And so who knows how much deflection. But if you're Carolina... And again, you don't have to deflect anything. The only thing that you would do if you were Carolina is you could put out a feeler that you like a certain quarterback. If you like another quarterback that you could get at 4, and then you go, look, we traded up to get the 1, but we'll trade down because we actually really like Anthony Richardson, and we don't think he's going to go 1-2
right
in the quarterbacks. But I don't think that's going to happen. So there's that one angle that the Panthers could play, which is, we have number 1. What would you give us for number 1? Because the guy we really like, we know we could get at 4. So I'm looking at you, Indianapolis. I think Indianapolis is, what, the third pick? Is it a fourth pick?
Yeah.
Yeah, third pick. Like, I'm looking at you, Colts. Like, if you really want the guy we want, what would you – we'll take the third pick. You give us a – boatload of picks for that one, we get our guy, and then we get all of your picks. We get all the picks however you packaged it. That's the one angle that they could still play here, which I think would be odd, because I can't remember in my lifetime a team drafting to get the number one pick and then trading the number one pick once they got it. I maybe it's happened and I don't remember it, but I can't remember a time where a team made an effort to get the number one pick and then went, oh, see ya, we'll trade out of that. We got it, now we're giving it up. Heck, I don't even think it happens when teams draft get into the top 5. If they move up to get into the top 5. So I'm really looking forward to Thursday night to see how everything is going to work out, and to see if the mock drafts are going to be a mock drafter.
Who wins the mock draft?
Right. Is it going to be Todd McShay or the legendary Mel Kiper?
The helmet.
God.
What was it? Is it Mel Kiper? It was something I was reading that, you know, was out, like, Jamarcus Russell. He's like the next John Elway.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was.
But what I love is seeing people pull that back out too, because I mean, for that was a huge miss, obviously. But he's been right countless times.
He's been right a lot. He's been wrong a lot. That's just the way that business works. It's what. You know what? Here's the what I tell people. I've been telling people for years, and this is not sticking up for the Mel Kipers of the world, right? I think, but what they really do is they offer you their own analysis, and you get a deeper dive into a player that you may have not seen at all. College football is very, very, very regional. Lately, it's got a little bit more national pull as more people from around the country will do watch, you know, Pac-12 After Dark, or they'll watch a Big Ten matchup, even if they live in SEC country. But for the most part, college football is very, very regional. So you know the players on your team, you know the players in your conference, you know your rivals, you know all of that. But you're not really, you don't really know how good the offensive guard for Washington is if you live in Mississippi, right? Unless you're a diehard, unless you're reading Phil Steele and you just, this is what you consume. But if you've got an accounting job Monday through Friday and you coach a team's, you know, fall soccer games on Saturdays, how much could you digest about what's going on at Stanford if you live, again, if you live in on the plains in Alabama, right?
Right.
So you need a Mel Kiper or a Todd McShay or name your, you know, Emory Hunt, who we're going to have on tomorrow, anybody that does this for a living, to sort of let you know how good these players are, right? How, you know, you can do your research, but you need somebody to go, hey, look, guys, I know you haven't seen Tyree Wilson out of Texas Tech, but here's what he can do. He's this phenomenal player, edge, as an edge rusher, linebacker. He can play multiple positions. And somebody, again, who lives in North Carolina is like, I've never even heard of him. And that's what you need these guys for. The picking players is just part of what they do.
Yeah.
But, you know, so to me,
I mean, it's a big guessing game. They have no
it
idea.
It is a big guessing game. They don't.
You know, I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at a friend down the hall, Lance Zierlein. He has his third mock draft up.
Nice.
And, you know, he has C.J. Stroud going one, but he has the Texans taking an edge.
So do they have Tyree Wilson or do they have Will
Anderson? He has Tyree Wilson.
Okay, that's the name that's really been moving up the board, right?
Yeah, because Arizona's at three, and he has Arizona taking Will Anderson.
Is the thought process that the Texans then have, what is it, the 12th pick?
Yes, but
they
have the
12th
pick, but he has the Texans making a trade to get up to seven. To get their quarterback.
Right. That's the big question I've got in this draft. Okay, I don't care if the Panthers take C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. I'm very curious of what the Texans do at two. Because I've seen mock drafts with, again, Tyree Wilson seems to be the betting favorite right now to go at number two. The Will Anderson's on the board, too. And D'Amico Ryans is a defensive guy, and I'm sure he's like, hey, I'm not taking this job unless I can build my defense. I need to build a defense. But if you're Nick Caserio, you got to go, well, I know, but if you don't mind, we kind of need a quarterback, right? Like, Davis Mills is a fun kid, but we need a quarterback.
Talking about he's fantastic, Tony.
Right? But I'm sure, you know, I guess, we have two picks in the first round, and we can get one of these guys.
Yeah, I think part of the logic here, too, is that they really like Bryce Young.
Right.
So if for whatever reason, if Carolina goes see C.J. Stroud.
C.J. Stroud, got it.
Right, Lance is saying, it's like, they'll probably go Bryce Young immediately. I mean, like, rush it up there as fast as they can before the Carolina changes their mind.
That's what you see a lot too. I like that aspect of the draft where a team is like, well, we'll be taking probably an offensive lineman, and then the guy ahead of you doesn't take player, and you're like, run to the table.
We've all seen the video of the Vikings laughing.
Yeah, right.
I can't remember was it Atlanta or no, Philadelphia?
It was Philadelphia.
Didn't take Justin Jefferson.
Right, right.
And they were all laughing about it. It's at that moment, it's like, how
ripping up your card. Ugh!
How fast were they running?
Yeah, to get to the board. Right, exactly.
You know, because, I mean, they probably had somebody else in mind at that point.
So I'm really seeing where Houston gets their QB at two, or, like, again, where they are at 12, moving up, staying at 12. I doubt you can get the guy you want at 12, so we'll see. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call. Appreciate you on a Monday. Spend draft night with our friends at VSIM. Their experts will be breaking down every pick and trade, as well as looking for live betting values across the board. You'll hear from former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Super Bowl champion quarterback Sean King, and the VSIM betting experts. You can catch all of the action beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern on April 27th on the Sports Map Radio Network. All right, so we got the draft coming up on Thursday night, which absolutely adds a bookend to a fantastic month of sports. Is that the right way to put it? A bookend?
Yes.
So you start the month with the NCAA tournament, the Final Four on Saturday on April 1st, and you end it with the weekend of draft selections by the NFL. And everybody's involved. Golf, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL. Everybody takes a turn at something in the month of April. And then May, June, and July come around, and we all go, eh, all right. We got the playoffs rolling along, the Kentucky Derby, the Indianapolis 500. What's the worst month? Is it July? Is July the worst month?
Yeah, I think.
Because June, you got the finals.
Yeah,
of both, NHL and NBA.
Yeah, because July is just simply baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really nothing else going on. That's where the All-Star
training
break.
Training camp opens up, but it's not a...
But real training camp for us is August.
Yeah.
That's when it really comes into full swing. That's when you start having the games. I mean, it's just... I mean, when you get to July and training camp does open up, it's just people practicing.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Maybe they're going 2 days. Maybe they're not.
Maybe we'll find out if Lamar Jackson signs that non-exclusive franchise tag. He's got till sometime in July to make up his mind. I think the Jets will still be like, okay, all right, we'll give you a third and a first in 2027. How's that? Let us think it over. Oh! You think by July we'll still be doing that? I'm still waiting at the end of the I'm still waiting on draft night for something to blow up with the Packers and the Jets.
Well, I mean, we still have that to wait for, and then all of a sudden, like over the weekend, even though all reports are saying it was Knicks, but you had Derrick Henry going to the Eagles.
I know. I saw that one, yeah.
All day. I mean, for you in Tennessee, that must have been, were people taken to the streets with pitchforks and torches?
Well, that's a great question. That is a great question because before that, there was even a divide. It became one of those local Nashville debates because there is no question that Derrick Henry is the main offensive weapon for this football team. But the overriding question is, do you have to change that philosophy to compete in the AFC? So that's a really good question because you've got – I don't want to say it's half because I don't know what the metrics are with the local radio here in Nashville. But you've got one part of the city going, if you get rid of Derrick Henry, what in God's name are you going to do offensively? And another side that says, you got to kind of tear this down and build it back up again. So we're back to lean years around here because there's no way that running the ball – and whoever may be the quarterback, whether you're sticking with Ryan Tannehill, whether it's Malik Willis, whether you draft Hendon Hooker or whoever in the draft or somebody else. And Hooker's coming off an ACL injury, so that would be another quarterback that's down the road working on coming back from an injury. It doesn't matter because you have to strip it down and start all over again. That the Derrick Henry running the ball offensive philosophy is not going to work in a land of Burrow and Mahomes and Allen and Lawrence and everybody else. I don't know. I mean, I kind of think you got to find a way to incorporate a better passing game. But my God, having a running back like Derrick Henry, I don't care what your offensive philosophy is, can't be a terrible thing. It is if you are overpaying him, and I think that's where it's coming from. But it is amazing, isn't it, that the AFC has now structured itself as such an elite offensive conference that when you have an elite offensive player like Derrick Henry, the question is, should we keep him around? Should we keep him around? I mean, what are running backs going to become in 10 years? Backup punters? Is that what we're talking about in this league?
Yes.
Because I'm not trying to date myself, but I came from a time where you could make the argument that a running back was as important as a quarterback in the NFL back in the day.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. Like, you couldn't win Super Bowls without a running game.
I mean, it's kind of funny because, I mean, also look at the Heisman now, right? The Heisman's just a glorified quarterback award.
Right.
And I think it's an extension now into the NFL that we just don't give running backs the credit that they once deserved.
It used to be that, again,
you built a team around a Barry Sanders.
Positions. Yes. Yes, and again, I'm not trying to say the good old days and whatnot. I get it that the league is more exciting when you're flinging the ball all over the place. But again, if you're talking about a generational talent in Derrick Henry, a guy with size and speed, the guy that can break a tackle and run 90 yards for a touchdown. Like, if he gets through that front line, he's off to the races. And the Titans are like, yeah, I know, but look at what we got. Look at our own division. We've got a Jacksonville team that's going to give us fits now. I get it. I absolutely get it. It's just an amazing change of time where you go from a period where running the ball was one of the most important things a team could do. And yes, passing was great, but you better be able to run, to a team deciding maybe we should ship Derrick Henry somewhere because we can't compete in our own conference with a strong running game. I mean, I understand the point. Believe me, I understand the point. Because there's one thing that the Chiefs have shown, the Chiefs, and the Bills too, but the Chiefs mostly, is that if you are trailing in a game by 14 points, you can make that up by the time somebody gets up to get another beer. That's how quick you can make up a two-score deficit when you have an elite passing game. Whereas the Titans go, yeah, if we're down 14, we are going to plod our way back into this football game, and it's not as effective. But I think that going back to the Jets Aaron Rodgers situation, to me, I'm looking forward to seeing draft day buzz about Aaron Rodgers. We talked about this last week. If you're the Jets, what's your goal? Your goal is to try to get through this week without having to give up any 2023 picks. If you're the Packers, what's your goal this week? Try to extract picks from the Jets today. You want the return today. You want something you can enjoy now. You're going to give up Aaron Rodgers. You want something you can get today. You're not getting the 13th pick in the draft. That's what the Jets hold in the first round. You're not getting that. But you could get picks on Friday. You get a couple picks on Friday. And that's what they're looking for. Now, if you're the Jets, you're trying to play on the Packers needing to get rid of Aaron Rodgers because they have a desire to do so. So you're trying to play that up and say, you want to get rid of this quarterback as badly as we want to have him. So let's not play the game like he's going to show up to your camp and you're going to be willing to pay him north of $50 million to play quarterback when you again are trying to start the Jordan Love era. So let's not play the game that you're happy as a clam to have Aaron Rodgers come back to Green Bay.
I just feel like one team is playing checkers and the other team's playing chess. They're not on the same page right now.
All right, so which one is playing chess? Is it the Packers?
See, I think I don't want to put the Jets down because it's like it feels like low hanging fruit.
I know.
To keep putting
the
Jets down. I think it's the Jets don't know what they're doing because at this point, I don't think they have any leverage except for the fact of, you know, what they can give up. But if they miss out, if Aaron Rodgers, you know, the Packers can say, you know what, the deal's just not good enough. It doesn't equal what we need, and they do the whole Shark Tank thing, go, we're out.
Right. Could be.
The Jets are screwed. I mean, are they going to go?
The Jets really are. The Jets have went out.
I mean, yes, they have Zach Wilson, but we all know they don't want to go back to Zach Wilson. Even Zach Wilson knows they don't want to use him.
No, you're absolutely right. The Jets understand the climate of their team, which is we've got a lot of young talent. We are an elite quarterback away from contending in this conference, which is a big statement for us, given not only us and our history, but the nature of the conference. I mean, we have that good a young talent around us. They're that good. And we think with Aaron Rodgers, we're in the conversation. Without Aaron Rodgers, we're not in the conversation.
Not even close.
We're not even close. So we are very, very desperate to make this happen, but we want to keep the 13th pick in the first round, the 11th pick in the second, the 12th in the second. Like, we want to keep these and then let you play around with our pick. But the Packers are like, what if you're good? What if you're good next season? Like, what if you're really good next season? What if you make the AFC conference game? And we're going to get a late first round pick,
yeah,
a late second round pick. Is that where we're going to get in 2024? Like we know who we're giving you. We know who we're giving you. Like, how about now when you stink and your picks are because you stink? Yeah, it's going to be interesting this week to see how this plays out. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up in next hour. We're also going to talk about another site I saw this weekend that really blew me away. We'll talk about all that coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.